You're listening to the Jefferson Exchange. I'm Mike Green. Welcome to another episode of JX Reads. Once a month, we check in with the librarians at Jackson County Library Services to learn about trends in popular books, recommendations, and more. Joining me in the studio, we have our resident librarian, Josh Letzinger. He's the Community Engagement Manager at Jackson County Library Services. Welcome back to the Exchange, Josh.
Thanks, Mike. It's great to be here.
Also joining the conversation are two selections librarians, Felicia Jenkins. Welcome, Felicia.
Hello. Thank you.
And April Bozada Armstrong.
Welcome. Thank you for having us.
Now, let's start with your roles at JCLX. Josh, tell us about your work.
Yeah, so Community Engagement Manager, Mike. The way I like to describe it is things that happen outside of the walls of a library. That's kind of what we're doing. We're doing marketing. We're doing outreach. We're trying to get people involved so that they can come in, feel comfortable checking out books that our wonderful selection librarians have provided for us.
Okay, so all the events are in your purview.
Events, programs. We have a programs coordinator who's separate, but we're, you know, outreach. We're going out to, you know, the lights festivals and just connecting with our communities however we can, where they are.
Okay, so how did you get involved in this? I mean, where'd you grow up and what led you to become the community outreach manager at JCLS?
Mike, we could have a whole segment on that. But short story is I actually grew up in Boise, Idaho, and then went to school in Salt Lake City, was there for about a decade, and then came back. And my career trajectory was very different. And so when I moved back to Boise in the mid-2010s, I got into marketing. And that's, again, that's the whole thing we could spend a different segment on. But marketing and communications. And I think what has always driven me is building communities. And so that looked differently over the course of my life. And then eventually I got to work with the Boise Public Library before this job. And I think that's kind of where my love for libraries and community and education and learning all kind of met into one kind of beautiful opportunity. And then turns out they had a job role for it called the Community Engagement Manager. So I couldn't be happier.
Well, it makes sense because the library is a central part of the community.
Yes, absolutely.
But communicating that with the community needs some management, I suppose.
The marketing, the outreach, we've got technology education, Spanish language services, all of the wonderful things that our communities are made of. And so then just getting the word out, you know, like anything is, you know, you are a wonderful, JPR is an excellent kind of like beacon of how we spread the word and share all of the news. And so we're, you know, I'm trying to emulate you. So thank you for guiding us here. But yeah, so it's how do we get our services? You're talking about our communities. I'm talking about specifically our library communities, but that encompasses everyone here in Jackson County.
Well, it's really interesting because as the community changes, you have to keep your finger on the pulse.
Absolutely. Yep. And I will say too, there's that element to it. And then our selection librarians are doing the exact same thing because our communities want different things out of their programs. They want things out of their books as well and their materials and digital materials too, specifically. And so that's kind of, we're seeing these shifts and trends and we're adapting to them.
Okay. And speaking of selection libraries, let's turn to you, Felicia. Tell me about your role.
I'm the adult selection librarian in the collection development department. So that's a new role that was created about 3 years ago. I'm coming up on my 3-year anniversary. So it was a new position. And kind of like Josh, it was just a dream that this position came about and that I got to interview for it and be hired. I feel incredibly grateful. Collection development, our selecting materials for a library. Often it's a duty that you have to do on top of other duties, so you don't get to fully give your attention to it typically in libraries. But this is a special case where we have now a department dedicated to it, and then I get to focus just on that. And that's an amazing thing to do. And I'm still 3 years in. I still feel like it's such a specialized thing that I'm continuing to learn, and I definitely still feel like a newbie.
It's a huge responsibility because it's like you're a curator of knowledge
right.
on our behalf.
Yes, I try to Let that sit lightly on me.
Knowledge and entertainment.
That's right. There's
some real fun stuff in there,
yes,
too.
Yes, absolutely.
So tell us your journey to this knowledge and entertainment job.
So I started out in a bookstore in the year 2000. and that was, starting my working life. And once I was in the bookstore, I'd always been a lifelong reader and loved reading growing up. And so when I was in the bookstore, I was like, oh, yeah, this is for me. And from there, I moved on to a library. And again, that same feeling like, oh, this, I've already felt at home here. This is absolutely where I want to be. And I just kind of continued that journey throughout my adulthood. And when I moved to Southern Oregon in 2010, I got my library degree soon after. And so I was able to really start my professional career here in Southern Oregon.
There's a library degree?
Yes. That is something that...
I do want to clarify too, Mike. You do have to have a degree to be a librarian, and I do not have that degree. So I'm technically not a librarian, and I don't want to take any credit for the work that the librarians out there do, because they are so knowledgeable, and I'm just here to help.
Okay. Well, you have experience in communicating with the community,
yes,
which the librarians need.
Yes, 100%. Yes. We're a working team.
April, let's talk about your role.
So my role is very new. I just started it in July. It's a newly created role that's adapting to the way that library services are changing and also the way that people are reading and listening to books. And so I am the digital selection librarian, which means that I have the purview over all of our digital collections, which are not on the shelves but are on your phone or computer. And specifically, I select books for Libby, which is an app a lot of people have on their phone, to read ebooks and listen to audiobooks.
Okay, so that's a huge responsibility, because that's what our younger generations and
older generations, yes.
Yeah,
it's the way
right.
that, especially we find that e-audiobooks mm-hmm. Are very popular. Most people are used to listening to music, JPR, a wide variety of other things through their phones or other devices. And so they're really comfortable with that audio format mm-hmm. through a device. And mm-hmm. so our Libby collection focuses pretty heavily on audiobooks, though we have a good selection of ebooks as well.
When you say Libby.
Libby. So it's a platform. It's an app you can put on your phone, or you can hop onto it on your laptop right there. And with your GCLS library card, you can log in and check out books.
Okay. Is that L-I-B-B-I?
L-I-B-B-Y.
L-I-B-B-Y. Okay.
Mm-hmm. But you can find the link to it on our website at jcls.org.
Gotcha. Yeah. If you're just joining us, my guests are all from Jackson County Library Services. Josh Letzinger is the Community Engagement Manager. Felicia Jenkins is in charge of adult book selections, and April Bozada Armstrong manages the digital collection. So I want to know from the selection librarians, what do you do on a day-to-day basis?
Yes.
We buy books.
Yes, that's a great short answer.
Always be selecting is our manager's motto. So we're always looking at what is out there. That includes ordering extra copies of things that are getting popular because of New York Times bestseller lists or the awards that have come out recently. And then we are also looking for those kind of new, interesting books that might be a good fit for the community.
Mm-hmm. How do you get feedback from the community? How do you kind of...
Yes.
Yeah.
We have a couple of tools for that. The one that comes to mind that I particularly have to work with a lot is suggestions from patrons, which is actually a really great way to get direct feedback from the community. Our readers read very widely in Jackson County, so mm-hmm. there's lots of different interests out there, but there's also kind of the standard best-selling authors mm-hmm. that we know we need to get. So it's a great way to learn about what people are interested in, and also they're consuming different types of media, so what mm-hmm. they're hearing about from their podcasts and the media they consume.
We learn about trends and micro trends.
Yes.
So romanticy is very popular right now. Mm-hmm. That's romance and fantasy put together. Ogres in love.
Shrek.
Yes. I'm surprised that hasn't happened yet.
I'm sorry, I'm just here pitching new book ideas now.
That does kind of happen on the side, too. Yeah.
So I have to give a shout out to Central Point Library.
Excellent.
Yeah. That's my home library.
Yeah. It's a good one.
I mean, excellent. Excellent.
Yeah. They're busy, busy, busy.
My boys have grown up in that library, and they have kept track of the changes, the demographic changes. I have a multiracial family, and we have different cultural outlooks, and that library, I got to tell you, their wide range of selections is just phenomenal.
Well, that's in part due to Felicia and our other teammate Monica and Lauren, and then also those who have come before us.
But that's wonderful to hear, because it's a system-wide collection that floats. So that's hopefully what everyone's seeing at the branches.
I see them spending a lot of time making sure that they're getting the right books to the right branches.
And that's really important, because as your community changes, people want to see themselves in the library, and they want to see their interests represented in the library as well.
Yes.
And, of course, knowledge of our American history, our melting pot, multicultural melting pot. Mm-hmm. You don't always see that in schools, so it's good to see it in a library. Tell me about the literary awards. Every year they have these major literary awards. They go to select authors. Mm-hmm. I'm interested to know which books received awards this year.
Yeah, so I'll start by kind of giving you a couple of the big ones. So the Booker Awards, that was an award that dates back to 1969. And I know these two can talk a little bit more, but that award's been going, and that's kind of one of the big, you know, if you get a Booker Award, your name is now, you know, you are now famous in the literary world. One of the interesting things, too, and I'll let y'all speak to that, but whoever received this year's Booker Award, the checkouts went
it's so the Booker Award prize went to let's see if I can recall this now, Flesh by David Saloy.
Yeah.
And we had purchased the book prior to the book winning the prize, and it had a couple of checkouts, but as soon as it was announced that it was the winner, we have up to 50 holds on the book now. So that's incredible for this community. It shows you like how much they're paying attention to the award, and how much just in our community that helps, and I'll borrow April's words, drives the checkouts for those titles, because otherwise it could have gotten lost.
Well, tell me more about the Booker Award. Why is it so popular, and how do people know when they're making these announcements?
It's well established.
Yeah. I mean, I assume they hear about it on JPR.
They do now.
They will now.
They're just widely known. And if you're following, they'll be announced in papers and articles. Yeah. It's just everywhere. And then you'll see those authors pop up a lot in media talking about winning the award. And so anytime a book is in the ether because they're promoting it for winning an award or because it's just been released, there's increased attention from media, and that helps communicate it to people and bring their awareness that it exists. And a lot of times literary fiction, like Flesh, goes a little bit more underseen than some of the more, you know, popular authors that just kind of have their built-in fan base, like James Patterson, Nora Roberts, these very familiar names. Freda McFadden's been huge this year. These are like those big blockbuster authors. But smaller books where the author's maybe only writing a book every couple of years, every 10 years, they don't necessarily have that built-in fan base yet. and something like the Booker Prize or the National Book Award can really help heighten their profile.
Well, so, I thought that was interesting, too. We were chatting out before the interview, so I said, you know, as someone who's new to the sphere or new to the award sphere, I said, well, what's the deal with the New York Times bestseller? I feel like everyone has a New York Times bestseller. And so that was part of the interesting conversation was the New York Times bestseller is, you know, how many sold copies do you have? So that's kind of like, you know, your established authors are naturally just going to sell those copies because people already know they exist. And so now this, you know, the Booker Award, the, you know, these other awards that come up to new or emerging authors or strictly for the book, the National Book Award, they provide that platform, that initial platform for folks to then get that recognition out. I'm, you know, I've got the information here. The first, you know, BBC televised the first Booker Award ceremony in 1976. So once that, you know, we've gone through this iteration of popularizing these emerging authors for just incredible pieces of work. And so, you know, it's great. It's all great.
Okay. So it sounds like with the New York Times, you got to sell a bunch of books to get there.
You got to sell a bunch of books.
But with these other literary awards, they actually can make you a name for yourself.
You write a good book, you make a name for yourself, and then you sell a lot of books.
There you go. Okay, we have to take a short break. I'll be back shortly with my guests from Jackson County Library Services, Josh Letzinger, Felicia Jenkins, and April Bozada Armstrong. You're listening to the Jefferson Exchange. I'm Mike Green. Joining me in the studio are my three guests from Jackson County Library Services. Josh Letzinger is the Community Engagement Manager, Felicia Jenkins is in charge of Adult Book Selections, and April Bozada Armstrong manages the Digital Collection. I got that right, right?
Of course, yes.
So before the break, we were talking about book awards. But now I want to talk about the best end-of-the-year lists. At, you know, every year, someone's compiling a whole bunch of books that we...
Not just someone, everyone.
So how do we find these lists? Why do they exist? And what are some of your recommendations?
I think they exist, number one, because people love to celebrate the things that they've enjoyed throughout the year. And that's just number one. You like to read about them. You like to compile a list. You like to say, I found this thing, and I would like to share it with you. And so I think that is the, like, nice thing about it, them. I also think that we appreciate them very much as selectors because they offer a lot of breadth that maybe the New York Times bestseller doesn't offer. When NPR is compiling their Books We Love list or the New York Times has their best of the year, they're looking at a lot of different genres and very methodically looking for things that are nonfiction, things that are fiction. There are many different kinds of readers. As I said, there's the romantasy readers. There's those people who like the hard-boiled thriller mysteries. And then there's people who love literary fiction. There's people who love cookbooks. And I feel that the bigger lists especially do a really good job of curating some of the most notable books from all of the different categories. So we really appreciate them as people who are selecting because maybe they bring things to our attention that we didn't know of before, or they bring things to our library users' attention. And then the books that maybe we wanted to be very popular start finding their audience as well.
Okay, and so JCLS, you have your own list.
Of course we do.
Tell me about your list.
So our list is cultivated from our coworkers.
Yes, and Kristen does, shout out to Kristen for also developing, curating some lists for the catalog.
Yeah, so we have what we call a reader's advisory channel where we look for what each other are reading or recommend or help identify what books a patron might be looking for. It's just focused on books, reading material, what we like, and Kristen will throw up a little post on there and be like, hey guys. Right. What was your best book of 2025? And then we think really hard about what we're going to submit because that's the reflection of us on the page.
Yeah. Okay, let's throw out some titles.
Yeah, and I'll just add one more thing to the publishing industry. It's so productive, and meaning that there's so many books that come out each year. So as a selector, what has been interesting to me, you know, again, kind of fairly new to this position, is just the volume that we work with. So there's so many incoming titles. So these end of year lists, the book awards, that all really helps to kind of segment and break up that market. So it's just not a fire hose coming at you.
Yes.
So that's what I really appreciate.
Yeah, we do appreciate that.
So this reminds me of Hollywood, and you know, they have to deal with all of the productions of films, and they give out the Oscars, and you know, and so someone's got to filter through all of that.
Right.
Yep, and decide what belongs on the top.
And that's you two.
No.
It's the staff at JCLS. Everyone gets the chance to say we're very democratic at JCLS. So everybody from Josh, who's not a librarian, to our library associates, those who work in circulation, get to give input on what Yes, what we would like our patrons to maybe check out.
Okay, so it's a team effort.
It's a team effort, definitely.
All right, now give me some titles.
All right.
Let's start with Anecdote, because I feel like we've talked about it.
Right. Yes. I literally thought Anecdote.
No. Antidote. It's by Karen Russell. It is on many long lists, short lists. I don't know that it has won a prize yet, but but her name has popped up everywhere.
Yes.
And
so we think we can see a prize in the future, potentially.
I don't know. Well, I can tell you a history there of awards for Karen Russell. So anyway, Anecdote is Karen Russell typically is a short storyist. She works in the magical realism vein. She kind of takes our reality and then kind of mutates it a little bit to tell us things about ourselves. And Anecdote really does that in an interesting way by giving us Nebraska, a town in Nebraska called Uz, not Oz. but there are some corollaries to The Wizard of Oz. There is a prairie witch who vaults people's memories for them, so takes away their memories and stores them kind of like in a bank for future use. And then a tornado hits us, taking out that memory bank. So she loses the memories, people lose access to those memories. Mm-hmm. And it kind of takes a longer, winding, fun trip, but it just kind of, when you're discussing memory, thinking about how that applies to how we think about who owns the land, what is the history of the land, what have we lost in passing things down. I can pass my specific memories down, but I don't necessarily have the memories of my ancestors to fill in the whole picture.
Ooh, that just gets really deep.
So it's like this kind of frothy description, prairie witch, vault of memories. But there's a lot more depth there.
Yeah. Okay, and how would you categorize this book?
I mean,
it has a historical fiction element, which we know is very popular with our patrons.
So it takes place during the Dust Bowl.
And it also has, like April mentioned, magical realism elements. Mm-hmm. And also, she's a really great writer.
So. She's a wonderful writer. Yeah. And as I mentioned about her awards history, she wrote the book Swamplandia, which people might be familiar with. It came out in, I think, 2011. I could be wrong. And that was about a young girl who inherited... or was from a family who owned like one of those alligator ranches in Florida. So she swam with alligators. So really fun stuff that seems frivolous, and there's a lot more underneath.
Remind me of the name of the book again.
That previous book was Swamplandia, and the author is Karen Russell, and she was on the short list for the Pulitzer that year with a couple of other books, and it's one of the very few years where they decided not to award an award to any of them.
Oh, wow.
So and who knows why.
And her latest book is?
Is Antidote.
Antidote.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
Okay. So what's another recommendation on the list?
Another finalist for the Booker Prize that I wanted to mention was The Endling by Maria Reva, and that one came on my radar. Again, going back to like the volume that we deal with, that was a title that I discovered. We have a automated report that we can run to show, it's called our overburden holds list, to get technical about it, but this kind of just is a quick snapshot of where the holds are, what titles we need to maybe order more copies of, it kind of gives a quick picture of what the demand is in the community. And so I like to look at those every so often to see what's happening. And that was a title where normally I can look down that holds list and recognize the authors and the titles coming up and them not be too surprised. But this title stood out. It's like, I don't remember this title. I don't know anything about this. How is this showing up on our holds list? And so... this is a title, once I had to go back and read, because we're reading a lot of book reviews throughout the day. So I had to go back, reread the kind of synopsis of the book. And what was interesting about it to me is that it takes place in kind of present day Ukraine and the eve specifically of the Russian invasion. And it's a young woman who is a scientist, and she has a trailer that she's converted into a lab, and she's trying to save endangered snails, and she's going across the Ukraine countryside trying to save these endangered snails and helping the snails find mates. And ironically, she also, you know, as academic funding and grant funding is kind of drying up and she can't you know, update her lab, she turns to the romance industry in the Ukraine, where they bring in Western men, you know, from the United States and Western Europe to find a, you know, they kind of marketed this idea that they can find a docile Ukrainian wife. And so she goes on these chaperone dates, but her motive is to make money to pay for her snail lab. And I just love that premise.
That's a great hook.
Yeah, so that was just a surprise. And that was like, oh, this is great that I found this coming from the community itself. So I don't know if that was just around the Booker Prize, and I was trying to think of the timing. But
that's quite an unusual plot, but I'm sure that's going to go over very well here in Ashland.
And then there will be a plethora of snail farms.
Yeah. I learned about snails as well.
If you're just tuning in, my guests are all from Jackson County Library Services, Josh Letzinger, Felicia Jenkins, and April Bozada Armstrong. So I noticed that your staff book list has a rating of stars. And I was just wondering, who contributes to that? Is that from people who just, you know, have read the book and can access that online, or is that from your staff?
So our accessible library catalog, which is just at our website, jcls.org, if you read the book and you want to rate the book, you can star it. So it comes from patrons.
Oh, yeah.
Okay, so if there are no stars, then there's no
it
one.
Just, maybe nobody took the time to rate it. I don't know that everybody knows that function is there. But also in the catalog, a lot of the books are tagged with the lists that they're on so that you can see. For instance, I'll give you another title here that has a very lengthy list of awards, short lists and notable things, and that's The Buffalo Hunter Hunter by Stephen Graham Jones. Stephen Graham Jones is an Indigenous horror author, but I'm recommending this one particularly because it's a very good audio choice. It's an epistolary novel, so it's told in lectures, and interviews and diary entries, kind of like Dracula, and that is appropriate because it is about a black feet man who is a vampire. And so again, like Antidote, it looks the man is a vampire, and he's seeking retribution for the slaughter of buffalo, thus the title Buffalo Hunter Hunter, and then for the genocide of his people. So that it's a less romantic idea of a vampire and more of a powerful idea of a vampire.
Wow, someone that's going after the colonial genre.
Yeah.
Okay.
I like the title a lot.
Yeah, Buffalo Hunter Hunter. I have to remind myself that extra hunter is there.
Are there any awards dedicated to children's literature?
Yes.
Yes, there are. Yes. And so those usually come out in February. We have most of them come out, right? If I'm not mistaken.
I'm not exactly sure.
Okay. Yeah. So they most come out in February, but we do have lists from previous years. One of the ones I wanted to kind of mention or go back to specifically right now for folks who are looking for those children's books at this time is the New York Times bestseller list for children's books. It's really interesting. You see, you know, like the Blueys of the world, the Bluey Goes on an Adventure, or, you know, anything from Mo Willems where you have Elephant and Piggy or Pigeon. Those are kind of the things that you see on those bestsellers. They're just, you know, wonderful picture books. And I know y'all can speak more to the, well, I guess we're missing our children's selection librarian
yes,
today, unfortunately. So I'm filling in.
I will say Elephant Piggy vetted by, I was the branch manager up in Prospect. I did a March Madness bracketed thing, Elephant and Piggy
won. Yeah. So anything Elephant and Piggy, it's the whole series. It's Mo Willems. So when I was working at my previous library, I got to meet Elephant and Piggy. I got my photo, so I'm really excited about that. But another great book, the name of the author is escaping me, but Owly.
Oh, yeah.
Owly, do you know the...
Yeah, it's a good little graphic novel.
Graphic novel, but it's you know, it's an owl. We have elephants, pigs, owls, pigeons. The kids tend to love the animal themes, but another great selection too, Owly. I actually got to end this. I'm so embarrassed that the name is escaping me because I met the author and we got to do some class visits and it was a lot of fun. But, you know, what I found with those books is the kids... when we're talking about these picture books and the best-selling, it's, you know, obviously the stories, I don't want to speak to that because I'm not the expert in that. But for me is the ability to engage with these characters and kind of feel your emotions as a kid in a very safe place, and you get to experience that. And also the characters are great. They're fun to draw. They're easy to draw. Kids, you know, it's just all around good experience.
Well, we only have about 30 seconds left.
Oh, my goodness.
I know this time has flown by. But I do want to know about the Rogue Reads program.
Yeah, so Rogue Reads, I'll keep it brief. Go to the website. It's everywhere. We have two book titles, Remarkably Bright Creatures by Shelby Van Pelt. And then for our youth or our children's, we have The Octopus Escapes by Miley Malloy. We have tons of copies in all of our branches, so check them out. And then at the end of February, we'll do Shelby Van Pelt will join us actually here in Medford at the Criterion Theater to do an author talk. All of it's free, programs, events, everything. Check it out online.
Fantastic. Thank you all.
Thank you.
Thank you for having us.
My guests were all from Jackson County Library Services, Josh Letzinger, Felicia Jenkins, and April Bozada Armstrong.